From 7CTOs, my name is Etienne De Bruin, and you're listening to the CTO Podcast. Every week, I spend time with fascinating people that enrich the lives of chief technology officers around the world. From perfecting the basics of building technology organizations to inspiring our minds into shaping our future. As always, the CTO Podcast is brought to you by 7CTOs, helping CTOs become world-class leaders. Let's go. Today I talked to Kevin Goldsmith. Boy, have we had some great conversations, and today is no exception. Kevin is a 7CTOs member and also a mentor. He's been a CTO and VPE at companies in the US, Sweden, and the UK. He's currently the CTO at DistroKid and a principal at Nimble Autonomy. He has a new book. It's called It Depends, Writing on Technology Leadership 2012 to 2022. You can find that wherever you need to, but also at Unit Circle Press. Enjoy this one. Kevin Goldsmith, are you in the same office? Something looks different. Are you standing?
I'm standing. Big new innovation. It's completely changed my worldview. Over the holidays, I got a monitor arm so I can raise and lower my monitor so I can stand instead of sit. Yeah.
Dude, that is next level.
You're lucky. I don't have the treadmill on. I could be walking this whole time.
Do you think that that's the solution to people like us needing to get healthier, is to move while we think or move while we type?
I'm just trying it. I mean, you have the beauty, the benefit of living in beautiful San Diego where you can walk outdoors any day you want and take a break. I'm up here in the upper left corner of the country where it's crummy out and it's no fun to go for a walk. So I find myself more than I would like saying, ugh, forget it. The dog's whining. And sorry, not one of those days.
I bought a desk treadmill. I bought it.
Yeah.
Shipped it. Had it in a box in my office for like 5 months.
Yeah.
Decided to open it, put it on, walked on it for maybe 10 minutes. Took it out from under my desk, put it up against the wall, and then got rid of it.
I'm still very early in the journey. Let's see how long I make it, but I'm going to try.
No, you need to try because we need you, Kevin. We need you to hang on this planet for as long as you can.
We'll do my best for you, my friend.
I had a doctor's appointment this morning, and I didn't want to go with everything I had. I did not want to go. And the overriding thought that solved that for me was I need to stay alive for my kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'll go to the doctor. No problem.
I was a smoker for a while, for years and years. And I tried to quit. I didn't really want to quit. I thought, well, I should quit. So I tried to quit, just couldn't quit. And then when we got pregnant with our child, I'm like, one day, just dropped. I had a pack of cigarettes. Wow. I dropped it in the garbage can, never smoked again.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just that thought of, well, okay, you know, when you're younger, you're like, I'm going to live forever anyway. And then all of a sudden, but, you know, if you don't, all right, at least you had a good time. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, okay, like there's a real reason for me.
Yes. Isn't it crazy how our brains will know we're doing something that's bad for us and it's going to lead to an early death. But then when you have a child, you're like, boom, done, out, it's finished, we're good.
Yeah.
How does the brain work, bro?
Well, you know, luckily, I have a PhD in neuroscience, and I can tell you, no, I have no idea, man. It's the way we are. We're we're imperfect specimens. We are kind of, we do what we do, I guess. And it's sometimes it takes a 2x4 upside the head before you realize, oh, this is really stupid what I'm doing. I really have to stop doing this.
Well, and never again. Like you never touched, yeah. You never touched. Wow.
There was a time, like, let's be clear, like there was a time where, especially when a few years later, we moved to Europe, everybody's smoking everywhere all the time. Yes, and I'm like, yes. Couple times, you're like here again, like West Coast of the US. No, you don't. I never see people smoking anymore. It's just not, you don't even think about it. All of a sudden I'm seeing people smoking everywhere. I'm like, ooh, I kind of miss it. But no, I just, it just didn't. Like, I kind of like, yeah, I don't really need it. At that point, I'd already been quit for a few years. I knew what would happen if I started. Like, I'll just have one. No, I'd be right back into it. So, and then since then, I missed it all.
Yeah. My biggest challenge is, I went on I've had some blood pressure problems. I'm 52 and I'm starting to get some blood pressure issues, and my dad will be quick to say that it's a family thing. But my functional nutritionist is like, dude, we can do this, man. And then we did an audit of what I eat and we realized, oh my goodness, you know, I'm asking for trouble.
Yeah.
And, over the vacation, I went cold turkey to a degree on my diet. And again, I had that overriding factor of, yeah, I need to be healthy. I mean, I don't want to drop dead just for no reason 5 years from now. And I tell you what, I lost 10 pounds. I felt amazing. And all of that went out the door when I had my first day back on the job.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then, and actually, I've had a very slow start to the year. I haven't felt great. Honestly, I think I am still suffering from burnout. And dude, I tell you what, man. And then I realized, oh my goodness, I'm actually experiencing incredible emotional response to my stresses of just being an entrepreneur / CTO and all that. And yeah, emotional eating, man. I just grab whatever I could to just get through the next hour. It's rough, man.
I certainly have that problem too, right? And I had that problem before while I was smoking. I didn't get better when I stopped smoking. Like having that, you know, used to be you're thinking about something, you're really trying to concentrate, can't figure it out, like whether it's a programming problem or whatever. Nothing greater than like stepping outside, going for like a 10-minute, 15-minute walk, like having a smoke, come back in, you address it, you know. But without that, it's all right. And here, by the way, like in an office where I could just go, oh, I'll just go over the kitchen.
Yes. All right.
Well, there's, you know, there's candy, there's whatever there.
Oh, my goodness.
But same, I like work at home now, and it's the same thing. I know what's in the kitchen. Same thing. Like, oh, I can't look at this anymore. I have to go do something else. And like, yeah, no, it totally happens.
My kids, I think it was my son's birthday. My kids bought a whole box of Bundt cupcakes.
Oh yeah.
And they each had their one. I think they each had two. And I just had the rest. You know, and I think what's bothering me on a sort of an existential level is just, wow, I really am having an emotional deregulation throughout the day. And it's, you know, it's the problem is hard to solve. And as you said, I'm trying to think it through,
right?
Give the brain more sugar or whatever it needs to get through this.
Yeah.
But what I'm curious about now, Kevin, is do you think the world has a better version of you because you're not smoking or a worse version of you?
It's been so long, I can't tell you. Okay. Honestly, wow, I don't know if I could tell you. It's been, you know, like 16 years or something. Yeah. So yeah. I'm like, there's so many ways I'm a different person. Like, yeah. I can't tell. I will say, all right, so there's... My one of my old bosses used to tell me, when my old boss at Microsoft used to tell me, because I was smoking while I was at Microsoft. And he used to tell me, like, they used to have this trick to the smokers on the team where they just hold them in a, you know, you'd be in a meeting and a meeting be like an hour and a half or 2 hours, and the smokers would start getting kind of itchy. And they would just hold, you know, hey, you know, maybe we take a break for like 10 minutes. And they'd be like, no, let's just power through this. And that would be their way of like convincing, like getting whatever they wanted from people. It's just like, oh, no, let's just keep it. No, you know, we're really in a good place now. Let's just keep it till we figure out who's going to take on this work. And then eventually you'd be like, fine, I'll take it. Just let's take a break.
Well, my final comment on smoking. When I so I don't smoke because I'm a raging asthmatic. So I was from early on was learned that that wasn't going to work. But with all my software development gigs and, you know, everywhere from South Africa to Germany to America, I was always envious of the little smoker circle, like the people that would go out, they would synchronize their smoke breaks.
Yep.
And they would chat, and I just felt to myself, that's such a healthy sociological thing to just like every 45 minutes, every hour, however, whatever their cadence was, there was just this awesome fellowship that I really felt. I almost thought I might just take up smoking just to be a part of that, because the non-smokers didn't have a ritual like that.
Right. Yeah, it'd be... Before I smoked, so I mean, I was also stupid. I started smoking when I was an adult. Like, it wasn't like I started as a kid when I didn't know better. I was an idiot. I knew better.
Well, you were in the band. You were in the band scene. It was probably cool.
It was a big part of it. Yeah, I was surrounded by lots of people smoking all the time. Yeah, but it was before that. Like, I was working at Silicon Graphics, and they had an espresso machine. Like a really nice one. And that had its own, you could find, like you could make your own little crew. You got to pick your vice or whatever. And so I wasn't smoking then. Like I'd go, but I, you know, liked espresso. So there'd be a little crowd around like the espresso machine. Cause back, it was like the old, it was like the barista kind. Cause it was, you know, early 90s. So like, yeah, we'd just like, you'd end up like seeing people kind of heading that way.
A little
like,
ritual. Now's the time.
Yeah. Of course, I didn't sleep those years, but yeah.
12 espressos later.
Exactly.
I will say that one of the best things I did as CTO of a small company once, I was a co-founder, was we bought a very expensive foods table, and that, talk about rituals, man.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was genius.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. So, what are you building now? Like, are you LLMing?
Oh, am I LLMing? Yes, all the time. Yeah. So, I mean, at DistroKid, it's now just part of the tool set. We're doing lots of kind of playing with it. We have a couple products that are built on it. We are using it for various things. And I'm, you know, working with the developers, trying to get them to see it as a, you know, just a useful, helpful tool to help their development. And it went from sort of skepticism to, I think, pretty much full embracement. They just, OpenAI just launched their Teams product. I was begging them to let us like into their enterprise program or to have this because I was tired of, you know, everybody expensing it. So the minute we opened the door of like, hey, you don't have to expense anymore, like, boom. Like the whole team more or less jumped in.
So I just wanted to, for those who don't know, Teams, the ChatGPT Teams program is, I know it's a version of their enterprise program for smaller teams.
Right. So that we couldn't sign up because we're too small. I don't know what size you have to be, but if you can't get a B2B salesman, a vendor to call you back, that means their product's oversubscribed. So this is like their brand new, they just released it a couple weeks ago, self-service. I just wanted corporate, you know, I just wanted governance and the default privacy settings and being able to on and off board people And also just not have people expense it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the biggest advantage is you're basically got your own container in which all your developers now are sharing the same data privacy that the company sets.
And we can share stuff more directly between ourselves. And there's a few features, but to me, it's a lot of it is the convenience of being able to easily on and offboard people, and then also make sure they have the right privacy settings. That alone was kind of worth it. It's a little bit pricier because they can make it a little bit pricier, but for now, I think we're cool with it.
Are you just training your developers to say, hey, don't use your personal ChatGPT when you're doing certain, when you're working for us, generating code for us, please use our, so that's just a corporate mandate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have, I wrote a policy, not just around ChatGPT, but around like all these kind of tools, including like Grammarly, all these kind of AI assisted tools where the data doesn't live locally. Like, this is what you're allowed to put in them. This is what you're not allowed to put in them. This is the settings you have to have. Yeah.
Did you have ChatGPT help you write that?
I absolutely did, man. Like, you know what? It's like so much of what we do as CTOs is produce, which is essentially boilerplate kind of stuff. And I've done a lot of these things enough times. I can just sit down and churn one out, just remembering what I've always done it before. But it's the blank page problem, and how do you, you know, so absolutely it has become my, and what do? Like, you go and look at other ones you can find on the internet scrape, you know, same with JDs, same with other things. So like, they've already done that you can just have them generate it. And of course I always rewrite it. I never just take it and use it directly, but it cuts the effort so much. Yeah. Why wouldn't I?
I'll tell you, for me, probably the most profound utility I get from it is when I have to write copy for an event or a podcast or a blog, and I can just say, all this crap I just wrote, just take it and just make it better. And I'm just always, and then it's like, no, use less words. No. Just be a little more like sensitive to this area.
Yep.
Really incredible to be watching ourselves interface with a machine on like it's another being.
I had to, I have this book coming out, and I was trying to figure out, what do I need to put in the index? And I'm like, it's already written. Like, I'm not going to reread it and look for keywords and then like build, you know, write them down by hand, you know, one by one. So no, I just fed the whole thing, you know, chapter by chapter, and with an instruction, generate me some JSON of what the indexes should be and where they're pointing at. And then I had some code that was using their API, and I had some code to just consolidate them, say, all right, if it shows up in more than this many times, now we're going to put in the index, or if it's proper name, or if it's whatever. And so, I had ChatGPT generate the index for my book.
Why did you want it in JSON format, brother?
Oh, because I wanted to write some Python to do the consolidation and set some rules on it. It's just easier in JSON. I could have done it in CSV, but it ended up like, it was great. It was a great tool.
Sometimes I feel like you're like the perfect CTO. You're a musician. You have communication skills. You've got wicked experience. You love coding.
Yeah.
You love communities. You give back. Who are you, brother?
I don't know. There's so many people I look at and go, wow, they're CTOing better than me by so much. They're like so much better CTOing than me. And it's usually like, oh, they do this better than me, or they do that better than me, or they do this thing that I know I need to do, but I never do because I'm always busy or whatever. But I try. Like, I think one of the benefits I have would just be, I've been around a long time, man. Like, I'm a couple of years older than you. Like, we've seen it, right? We've been there, right? Yeah. And so we just have, we get to leverage all that experience, and we never got stuck in like in the pockets of, no, like, why would you ever not use mainframes? Like, we were interested. We were excited. Yes, like, that's why we got into tech in the first place. So
do you think that the 20-year-old versions of us today, so let's say right now there exists most likely a 20-year-old who's like me and a 20-year-old who's like you.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think their CTO, their path to CTO-dom is going to look like? And do you think that the role of CTO still exists 30 years from now? I mean, not 30. Let's say 10 years from now. It'll exist. But I'm curious to know what it would look like in your opinion.
That's fascinating. So, the path that you and I had, and you, and by the way, like every, you've met so many CTOs, right? And I've met a bunch, not as many. Every one of us has had a completely different path, right? So even the folks that are our age and kind of started in a different era, and like you started on a different continent, right? For me, like I started in the Valley, kind of where we started and kind of how we got to where we got is still completely different, even though we're sort of same vintage. So I'm going to go ahead and say, like, one, the path is totally different. But there are avenues open now that were totally not open to us. There were no startups. And when I graduated university in 92, maybe there were startups, but not many. It wasn't like a real kind of available path to people that would pay you a living wage, right? And so I went to a big company. I went to Silicon Graphics, right? But within a few years, it was mid-90s, mid to late 90s in that area, that started to become a thing. And I kind of stayed at the big, I kind of did a little time in startups, went back to big companies. It was kind of whatever. But, you know, today, like, you can graduate school or not go to school, graduate a program, just be really good, jump into a startup, get the right early stage startup, you're a CTO in 3 years, 4 years, right? Doesn't mean you're going to be a good one, but at least, like, you can, that path is totally different. Like, if I'd stayed at Adobe, if I'd stayed at IBM, if I'd stayed at Spotify, if I'd, you know, any of these bigger companies I worked at, there was no way. I was a VP of engineering at Spotify. Was I ever going to be a CTO there? No, because my boss was a CTO. He was younger than me and he had the best job in Sweden. Why would he ever leave that job? Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, was I ever going to be the CTO of Microsoft? No. Like, there's a when I left, there was like 100,000 people there. Like, there was no way that was ever going to happen for me. But you know, I kind of went in a different way and then kind of got there. So I think they have a lot. I think younger folks today, 20-year-olds today, they have a much easier, that's not me, that's not right. They have a much more direct, they have more paths to that role than you or I did, certainly at that age.
Yeah, and more people will be building tech, managing small teams because of their excitement for what they're building and not be hampered by not understanding the principles of complexity or computer science.
I think that's the other thing too, right? Like, think about us, you know, think about the 90s, think about early 2000s. How are you going to learn this job? Like, you weren't. You were either good at it, maybe you had a good mentor, right? You were either good at it or you weren't. And nobody was necessary. And you also know, like, by the time you get to CTO, nobody's going to help you be a good CTO. You're either a good one or you're not. And if you're not, you're gone. Like, they don't have time to train you when you get to that level. Like, you're either good at, you're either filling the role or you're not. So, but now you have like 7 CTOs and you have tons of books about not only like better books about management than we had, but better books about kind of modern management, like the kind of stuff we have to do. And then you have books on specifically like technology management, which didn't exist. There was like 2 books I read before 2000 that both sucked. So, you know, the landscape, there's tons of conferences now. There were none. Like, there's tons more resources for you. There's podcasts like this, right, that you can listen to and at least get some sort of learning and help you be better at your job. So, yeah, I don't know. I think 10 years from now, will there still be CTOs? Yeah, of course, there's still going to be CTOs.
But I'm noticing you're not making any mention of AI.
This is where I would probably come in, right? Which is, what is the CTO job going to look like in 10 years? I'm still very much in the very firm belief that, you know, AI from the 40s or something, if you want to really look at it, but it's like almost a century old. But kind of modern AI, like, been working through that whole thing, when it didn't exist to when it sort of was there to now. And it's only getting better, only becoming more useful. I still look at it, though, as a tool that we either adopt and use and make ourselves more efficient and better at what we do so that we can do more complicated things, or we ignore and then, you know, maybe end up out of a job. Do I think that we will have the same demand for developers and development teams will be as large as they are today? Maybe not, because you'll have these really great tools that help you be more efficient. But I don't think it's replacing us anytime soon.
Yeah. And I think what is so magical about just, you know, whether it's rudimentary compared to the future or whether it's amazing compared to the future, using generative text generators, I find that with this conversational interface, you can try things that you can just be like, oh, I wonder what it's like to build an app that can ping me every time the washing machines, you know. Now it's not like, oh, I've got to go to Upwork. I have to define the requirements. I have to negotiate a something, something. It's just you got this little assistant. No offense, ChatGPT, but you got this thing that just wants to help. It's like, are we going to build a, are we going to do this? And so what I find fascinating is that our limitations or it's unshackled, like our brains can just be like, I'm going to try. And then you add a team of really smart people who work together in human form to then have an AI assistant try things out for them. I mean, wow, that's got to be insane.
Today it's very much like it's kind of weird, because it's a little bit like having like a fairly talented intern on the team that you can give kind of the grunt work to, and they'll do a pretty good job. You may have to, hey, can you fix this, or this doesn't look right, kind of thing. It's that, but then it's also kind of the senior engineer that's your code, that's like doing your PRs, you know, reviewing your PRs, so you can kind of use it in between. And that maybe in a few years, or definitely in a few years, it'll go from being like a pretty good intern for code generation to being like a pretty good junior dev, or maybe even a mid-level dev. But what that means is it's still not, and I don't think it ever will be, good at kind of invention. It's really good at kind of taking solved problems and giving you pretty good solutions to solve problems, which is awesome. Like, the last thing we want developers to do is solve already solved problems. So that's where I'm saying, like, we can use it as a tool, so we don't have to write a login page, because there's a billion of them and ChatGPT has looked at them all.
Yes.
We can use that to generate the login page, because that's a waste of developer time today, and focus instead on like, what's the hard thing, the thing we have to actually figure out. And even there, we'll be able to use these tools to help us figure out this part of it or this part of it. But there's still, like, I don't see it, you being able to type into ChatGPT, please give me a corporate, enterprise quality chat client that allows for channels and blah, 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 and have it spit out, I was going to say Stripe, but you Slack and have it spit out Slack, right? It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to happen 10 years from now either.
Although it seems like there are more and more VC types who are saying, oh, we're going to take any B2B app and we're going to build it at 20% of the cost, and we're going to now go after proven business models and just introduce cheaper technology. So,
yes, there's excitement around it. Maybe somebody will figure it out. You know, never say never, right?
Yeah.
But there's been real excitement from VCs about lots of stuff that's never panned out.
Are you ready to elevate your team's performance and your own career as CTO? Introducing the 7CTOs Growth Program. With 7CTOs, you'll join a supportive community of tech leaders dedicated to helping you reach new heights. Our group coaching program, led by experienced CTOs, focuses on the proven CTO levels framework. Assess your team, processes, and technology challenges with our easy-to-complete assessments, and then dive deep into monthly coaching calls where you'll get unstuck and gain insights on specific topics. Craft actionable plans tailored to your needs, guided by expert advice and playbooks designed to drive results. Plus, gain access to our exclusive CTO community for ongoing support and collaboration. Sign up now and start your group coaching adventure for only $300 per month or $3,000 per year. Your membership includes priority access to all 7CTO's events and activities. Don't miss out on the opportunity to join a global community of experienced CTOs, attend virtual events, and participate in confidential group coaching sessions. Visit 7CTOs.com/growth and level up your leadership skills today. Let me ask you a quick question about ChatGPT Teams.
Yeah. I'm not a salesman. I'm not a spokesman for this. I am a 2 week in happy customer.
Dude. The OpenAI ingestion of this transcript is going to send some coins your way, bro.
Yeah, man. Like I need to give a token out or something so I can get like referral code.
My question with Teams, one thing I've been thinking about with you know, let's say you can take your whole app, let's say it's 100,000 lines of code,
yeah,
and you just dump it into your Teams account,
yeah, or like train a model on it, yeah, sure.
Well, here's my question: let's say your code base is in Camel Case,
sure,
and this is going to be a simple example, but let's say your code's in Camel Case,
yes,
you've uploaded all of it to your system. To your account. And then you say, hey, can you generate a piece of code for me that does something, something? Will it know that your code base is Camel Case, or will it be an asshole and do something in Snake Case? Or like, is that what Teams gives you? Is it sort of that larger context?
No. I mean, it is essentially like buying a ChatGPT Plus account, except that there's actually an admin interface and you can enroll people and pay for it with a single invoice or credit card or whatever, and that all those accounts have privacy. You know, you can turn on "don't use my data for training" in ChatGPT Plus, but you have to turn it on. This is all turned on by default. It also lets you share chats between team members and stuff, but it is not training. It is not building a new model around the data from your team. You'd still have to go and train ChatGPT model on your code, like basically do it.
So in this account, can I upload my code and say, this is my app?
You can. You're still stuck on like token limits, and the token limits are higher, but you're still stuck on token limits. So you'd either have to build a vector database. You'd have to do the kind of things you still have to do with normal ChatGPT, like train a model or build a vector database to load in to supply that context. But you'd at least not have to worry about that data leaking out.
Okay.
I still, by the way, like part of our policy still says like no keys, no passwords, all that kind of stuff. Because that concerns me. But, you know, a little bit of our code, I'm not worried about our code leaking out.
Yeah. No, I get it. Now, I think in what I've described, so let's forget about the commercial side of it.
Yeah.
If I can take my web app and just upload it to the ghost in the machine, and the machine is, and then you can just say to the machine, hey, I want to just add another menu item that will allow users to change their avatar, and it writes a completely context sensitive to your app solution. Is what I'm describing, is that like par for the course already, or is that still coming?
No, you can do that today. Not like just drop it. Yeah, I mean, it's not to drop it into ChatGPT today. I mean, although depending on the size of your application, you maybe could take this code, add this for me. I do that a lot of times on just like, hey, this function, I'm like, I'm trying to figure out how to do this. This function needs to have this now. Can you suggest what that would look like? Or this doesn't seem to work right. Can you make a suggestion on how, or could you give me code that would do this correctly? Right.
Got it.
Yeah. So I do that all the time.
Are we at a place where we should just be mandating our developers to use ChatGPT?
I'm not going to say that for anybody else. And I don't currently. I'm really still in the realm of this is super useful and please don't waste time doing dumb stuff that you can let this do for you.
Got it.
And getting and kind of teaching them, you know, there is always, not always, I mean, there's often skepticism about this can't do, I've been doing this forever, this can't do anything as good as me. And then when you start playing with it, you realize, oh, actually, you know, this is kind of very helpful, right?
Like, yeah.
Why waste time doing this thing I can have it do for me?
Excellent. So you did drop a little, you know, I don't know if the audience noticed, but you did drop that you are writing a book.
Yes, or written.
I want to know what it's about, who is it for, and how many times did you quote me? Like all the stuff, just let it rip.
So often, I quoted you so often, you might as well have been a co-author. I should probably be comping you. So this is inspired by a few people. I decided, you know, I've been writing a blog about tech management since about 2010, quite a long time. I'm not a hugely prolific writer, but, you know, when I think of, hey, you know what, or I'm mentoring somebody and they ask me about something and I realize, you know what, actually, I remember, like, this took me a while to figure out myself, or I think maybe I have some insight into this because of my own experience that might be useful for other people. I will go and write a blog post about it.
Mm. I've seen them. I love those posts.
Thank you. And, you know, every once in a while, somebody would ask me, or even had publishers kind of approach me a few times, like, would you be interested in writing a book? And, you know, I have a day job and kind of busy. So I've been, I don't know. And around COVID time, I had time and I was starting to think, you know, maybe it would be helpful. I got much more involved. I had more time and I was home. So I ended up spending a lot more of my time kind of mentoring people and working with other companies and kind of helping their teams out. And, I realized I'm repeating things that I've already written about. And I'm now handing people, hey, I'm going to give you a 5-minute version of this, but you know what? I actually kind of wrote something about this. I think is, you know, you can read that and then let's talk about that. So I ended up realizing I was kind of, oh, you know what? And looking through things and going, I have, you know, there's a lot of good stuff here. So I decided, you know what? Let me look through that. Let me kind of assemble it. And that actually would be like a good kind of first book. And so I'm very much taking this approach with it of, but I also knew, like, I'm a way better writer today than I was in 2012. I'm not a writer. I'm a programmer, right? So, and writing isn't my favorite thing to do, but I've gotten better at it over the years. And if I look at some of that old stuff, it's not great. I mean, it's a good idea, not expressed well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was the big effort of it, is I'm going to go and take those things and leave them with their context. I say some weird stuff like about Marissa Meyer taking over Yahoo that doesn't mean anything today, but at the time it has some context to what I was talking about. So I'm like, I'm going to leave the context all there. This is something written in 2017. It had themes or ideas that were applicable past 2017, but it's talking about 2017 things. I'm going to leave that in there. I'm not going to change what I said or fix it when I said something wrong. I'll add maybe a note, I was wrong, or something like that. But I edited it just to make it flow better, to make the writing more clear. So that was kind of the process, and then kind of put it into a non-sequential but kind of logical order, and then that ended up being the book. Because I am not a huge writer, it took me way longer than I thought it would.
Yeah.
It's to 2022 is the beginning of 2022 is the most recent post, and it's 2024. But it's done now. It's coming out in beginning of March. It's called It Depends, Writing on Technology Leadership 2012 to 2022. People would always ask me like, if you were going to write a book, like what would the name of your book be? And I'm like, it depends.
And they're like, no. What's the name of your book? And you're like, it depends.
Exactly. And the reason was that so often, you know, people ask you for advice, and you tell them, well, this is what I did in that situation, but these are the reasons why I did this thing that you should think about. Does this make sense for you? It may or may not. And the thing I always dislike reading, I read lots of management books now. The thing I always dislike reading other people's books is when they'll tell you, oh, you should only have 7 reports maximum. You should have between 5 and 7 reports, period. And then people take that as like, oh, well, this book said I should only have 5 to 7 reports. I currently have 8. I need to fire somebody, or I need to like reorg stuff. I've had 14 reports. I had directs. I had with another 4 dotted line to me. It was a nightmare, but I figured out how I needed to make it work because I didn't want to, you know, for whatever reason. So yeah, in that context, that was the right thing. I should have had fewer, but I didn't have a clear structure to do it. So I'll never tell you that.
Yeah.
Like, I will always tell you,
it depends.
It depends. This is what, you know, it came up a lot because when I worked at Spotify, people were out just trying to copy Spotify. Like, and then they'd tell me like, Spotify doesn't work. You're all lying to us because like we created tribes and squads and guilds and stuff and it doesn't work. You know, like, do you actually have team autonomy? And like, no, of course they don't, because all they did was took the structures and none of the culture. I'm like, well, you need, there's a whole bunch of stuff here that's wrapped around it. That context is really relevant. And I just wanted to, that's my thing, is I'm always just trying to reinforce like context is critical. And unless you have that whole thing, and even then, like, you can't, like, I had those kind of rules when I was younger, like, you should always do this, or you should never do this. And like, I would dish it out like sage management advice. And I was totally wrong, man. Like, it had worked for me twice, or worked for me once. And therefore, this is what you always do. So that's like my pet peeves. That's kind of where the name came from.
So it's called It Depends.
It Depends, Writing on Technology Leadership 2012 to 2022.
Oh, that's beautiful. And is it sort of a hackers and painters style collection of essays?
Yeah. Or like a Hard Thing About Hard Things, or yes, like yes. That. And that was sort of my inspiration, was also, you know, I've now bought and read books of blog posts that I could have just looked at on the blog, or even I'd read some of, but honestly putting them together in an order actually does work. But yes, and so it's more convenient. I'll freely admit, like, it's a convenience thing. I didn't take down any of the blog posts. I haven't reposted them as edited, but I didn't take anything down. You can still read off my blog and stuff.
What I love about it is it's, you know, someone wants the book. Like, I'm considering, I have plans to read my book.
Yeah.
In a podcast format.
I'm already doing that. You're too late, my friend.
Yes, you're right. You're right. You're doing that. I saw a tweet that you were doing it.
Yes. So two things. So one thing, I'm self-releasing the book. I thought about having somebody pitching it to publishers and trying to get somebody to do that. And I realized, like, I don't want to take the post down from my blog.
Yes.
And I'd feel bad about charging people and having to make somebody else money for something I'm very happy to just give away, because it's not a money making venture for me. And so when I kind of, and also inspired by like Cory Doctorow and how he approaches his writing, specifically in this case, I'm like, you know what? Well, how would I promote a book normally? If it was like I sat down and wrote it beginning to end and the content didn't appear anywhere else, well, I'd be appearing on podcasts, or I'd have a newsletter where I talk about stuff, just trying to get people's attention to it. And I'm like, well, all right, I can just do that with the book. I recorded the audio book. It's still being edited, but I'm like, oh, I have all these chapters. And again, like, well, you can't get them in audio, but the text is on my blog. All right, maybe I'll just give them away. And if you want to buy the audiobook, you can get it, and then it's nice. It's in like beginning, end, and you can listen to it. But then as I've now, you know, the second podcast come out, I also have the newsletter where I'm also serializing the book.
Okay. Content flywheel, man.
Yeah, man. Like, you can subscribe to either of those things. You'll eventually get the whole book. I'm not like giving you a chapter a day. You're going to have to wait a while. I am still trying to like get, you know, there's a convenience. It's as cheap as, you know, the various platforms will let me make it. Like, go get it. But
yeah, like Buzzsprout lets you upload 20 minutes a month. It's like, oh man.
I'm using Podbean at the moment, but I may self-host at a certain point. I'm realizing what I was kind of hoping for from these platforms isn't quite what I was getting. But then I also realized, oh, if I do it that way, this is easy. Like, talking to somebody is easy. But if I have this chapter, oh, there's all this context about when I wrote it, why I wrote it. I can give that in the podcast, or in the newsletter. It's just the book would be way too long. Right. Yes. And it wouldn't necessarily flow the same way. So if you do that, I heartily recommend it. But I would also add that. So, and one of the things I noticed, you know, when I read it straight, right? Every word into the recording. And so it's also formal, you know, it's a bit more formal because I write more formally than I speak.
Yeah.
So then adding that kind of conversational context around it, it's really weird because when you listen to the podcast, you hear me talking like this, and then, okay, here's the audiobook, and I sound like I don't sound like a completely different person, but it's a really different tone. It's a little weird. Yeah. It's fun.
That's actually a burning question I had, was whether one should just read the chapter and call that an episode, or I love what you said about, it's almost like meet the author, right? And they can just explain to you, well, I wrote this part of the book because, and then you get all this backstory that you never knew.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that I, you know, my book is out on Audible and it's not my voice.
Did you use a service or?
I did all the publishing through Scribe.
Okay.
So Houndstooth, basically. And then Audible was part of the package. And so the book is out there. But I chose, a lot of people said, oh, Etienne, you should read the book. You should be. Yeah, and I felt I felt, and this was maybe a mistake.
Yeah.
I wanted someone from the underrepresented communities in technology to read the book.
Oh, that's nice. That's awesome.
And so I auditioned. Basically, I auditioned about 8 women of color, and it was a fantastic experience. And yeah, I landed on someone, and she was incredible, and she read the book. And I feel good about that decision. Although
I didn't know. Yeah, that's awesome. I own the books. I haven't bought the audiobook, so I didn't realize you did that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So for me, I was like, oh man, another white dude reading another tech book.
Thanks a lot. Sure.
So I was, I actually made a, you know, I made a values-based decision there.
Yeah.
And I think it actually opens a door for me to just enjoy and have fun with, like what you suggested to make a lovely conversational piece out of the things I wrote.
Right.
And so are you opening the episode with a little something you read and then you close it and then that's an episode?
Yeah. In fact,
is it published or can we go subscribe to it already?
Yeah. You can go to itdependsbook.net.
Okay.
And that's got, pre-sales are up now on Amazon, waiting on the other places, but I'll get those links there.
Yeah, I'll push those links. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's all from there. So you can get to the podcast from there. You can get to the newsletter from there. Okay. Itdependsbook.net.
There we go. Wow, brother. I love this.
The thing I would do differently, like what you did is I think that's genius. That's awesome. Because I'm not, as part of the podcast, I'm not reading the book. I've already read the book. Like in the context of an audiobook.
Yes. So you have the files.
I have all the files for the audiobook. Like I said, they're still being edited, but they're being edited like an audiobook. So like all that's getting pulled out, which I do frighteningly a lot. Yeah, I'm realizing. What's also interesting, by the way, if you do it yourself, you learn how by the end, again, like I've spent a lot of time on mics. But I'd never done like this kind of thing. By the end of it, I was way better. Like I wasn't screwing up as much. I learned how to kind of breathe in a way that wasn't really loud and stuff like that. So I learned a lot of stuff through the process. But anyway, I was going to say, but if you read it yourself, like if I was actually doing the podcast and I got the book in front of me and I'm reading it, I would have put in like for a podcast, I would put in all these asides like in the middle of the chapter and stuff like that, that I don't because I'm here's me talking about the book. Here's a chapter from the book. Here's me talking about the book.
Oh, so you're saying if you could do it again,
if I was doing it the way you're doing it,
like you would actually do it in once, like you would make it all one thing, like I almost feel, and this might be super annoying, I don't know, but I almost feel like when I've read a paragraph or I've read a section, I might just say, man, yeah, I can clearly remember when, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a fun little project.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, especially because you have somebody else reading the book. Because I was just trying to get the book done. Like the idea of rereading it again, like was particularly painful.
And yes, tell me just quickly, you read your audiobook.
Yes.
Who did the editing of it?
Me. I'm doing the editing of it. Yeah. Cause I have a lot of, so I'm weird cause I've been in music for so long. So I'm pretty and I was in radio, and stuff. So I'm kind of comfortable. I'm very comfortable doing that kind of stuff. I wouldn't recommend it to people unless you are very comfortable with that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm noticing on Amazon that your book is not, are you going to publish your book? What I mean is can I buy a hard copy of it?
Yes, I am approving the galleys, like the preprints right now.
Oh, got it.
And then I'll make those available as well. Yeah, it'll be available on Amazon. It'll be available Kindle, paperback, hardback on the bookshop.org, which is the it'll be available on ebook or paperback, and it should also be available in stores. No one's going to stock it, but you know, you can go to your bookshop, your local bookshop, and say, please, could you order this book? And they'll order it for you too. And if you care about that kind of stuff, I thought it was kind of important that it was available in non Amazon choices for people that care about that stuff.
Yes. Well, I'm very excited about that. It's awesome. You know, it was cool to see Dave Mango's book come out and your book coming out. Kathy Keating is going to release a book. So this is good. This is a marker in time where certain body of knowledge is available and will be hot for a few years, and then it will be like, who are those guys? What do they know?
Yeah, maybe. Entirely possible.
Timeless is what we are looking for.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Yeah. This was awesome. I don't think I got to anything I wanted to talk about, but definitely wanted to talk about your book. But
yes, thank you.
That was really cool to vibe with you. And
always good to talk to you, man.
We'll talk soon again, brother.
Absolutely.
Okay, take care.
Later.
Cheers. That's the show. Check out ctopod.com. Stay connected. We love hearing from CTOs. We love hearing from CEOs. Anybody who needs to get their CTO plugged in, check out 7ctos.com. There are membership levels for everybody, so it's never too late to expand your network, nurture your relationships, and please, let's see each other soon, like next week. Cheers.